And for the first time in 2013, even though it's April, welcome to the Agile Revolution. This is Craig.
Hi, it's Renee here.
And Tony is somewhere.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, Tony. we're in Sydney town.
Sydney.
Now, just before we get into stuff, Renee, Happy New Year.
And wait. Happy Easter.
Yeah, Happy Easter. And I've already got your Christmas present, and I think you're going to be pleasantly not surprised.
Now, in fairness, we have actually recorded two podcasts prior to this.
Yes, but they're on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, third time's a charm?
It seems somebody has had a little problem with their computer.
Yeah, so I have A, been very, very sick, B, moved to Sydney, C, have had dial-up issues, D, have had computer issues.
La, 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 all I'm hearing is excuses, talk to the hand.
But I'm here now.
You're here now. And I'm here in the only... Yeah, so we're getting that sorted out. But, yeah, we've had so many people come up and go, when's the next Agile Revolution? And we told all two of them that it's going to be very soon. So here we are. So, yes, in Sydney town, why are we here, though? Well, you kind of...
I live here. Yeah.
Sort of.
I fly in and out on the weekends.
Mm, yes, you're a commuter coach.
But the great advantage to that is I've now been shoved off the plane when I was used to be in, like, row 27, and I'm now up to row 4.
Oh, cool. So, what, you're platinum class now?
I'm now silver, and I'm getting close to gold.
Oh, there you go. Well, I might even see you in the lounge on Friday. Oh, dear. So, yes, Agile Revolution, it just seems like forever, doesn't it? So, anyway, we're back, and heaps of things to talk about. What's happened in the last 3 months?
Anything? No, nothing.
And thank you for listening to the Agile Revolution. No, we got heaps of stuff. Scrum Australia is why we're here, though.
While we're together, yes.
Yes. Scrum Australia, so here it's the inaugural one here in Sydney, sort of Scrum Alliance event.
Does inaugural mean every second year, right?
Something like that, but it's inaugural is the first.
Oh, right. I was going to say, it's
biennial,
the first.
Biennial is the second.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, it's the first.
Yeah, it's kind of late at night and Renee switched her brain off in 2 days of conference.
I just don't know what an inaugural means, obviously.
There you go. The first Scrum gathering here in Australia, Scrum Australia, and community run, which I think is really awesome. I'm seeing a lot more of these conferences. In the last podcast that made it on the editing room floor, I talked about RubyConf. And given that hit the floor, I might even talk a little bit about that again a little later. But I've just been to a few more of these community-run conferences. It's something I know that overseas they do quite a bit. But here in Australia, we've had lots of hack days and meetups, but now conferences are starting to become a bit more prevalent and run by the community. I think it's an awesome thing.
It's a really challenging thing. I know that the people who run it have spent plenty of hours.
And we should give a shout out to those guys too, like you know, people like Elaine Goldstein, Rowan Bunning,
yep.
Colin Tan,
yep.
And I'm forgetting Martin Kearns,
yep.
Right? You know, really awesome job. A heap of volunteers as well here in the Australian community to get this up and running, which is awesome. Right? Sorry about that.
Craig's throwing his iPad around.
That's it. I don't need this crap anymore. But yeah, it's a tough thing.
And that said, there's other community conferences as well within Australia. There's Agile Tour in Sydney.
Last.
Yeah, and Last within Melbourne, which Last, as a side note, is open for submissions right now.
It is too. Yes, that's in Melbourne. It's the Lean and Systems Thinking Conference.
Yes.
Again, very open. Was it 1 day or 2 days?
Oh, well, yeah. So
depends who you know.
Depends who you know. I suspect it might end up being one.
Okay, but yeah, so and as I said, RubyConf, there's you know, some web sort of conferences as well. Really, really awesome to see.
Mm.
I think there's a place for everybody in this little old world of ours.
Excellent.
Mm. So
and a price tag for everybody too.
And a price tag for everybody as well. Yes. My motto: if it's free, it's me. If free, it's for me. If I got to pay, no way.
Really?
No. Oh. But no. Support the community, but it helps if you talk.
Okay.
Yeah, then you get your ticket for free, so anyway. Moving right along, 2 days of Scrum Australia. What are your thoughts, Renee?
So I was really looking forward to the conference from the perspective that I saw the program in advance and some really great speakers, people that I know and love, people I know that do a great presentation, the topics that they talk about, they're incredibly passionate, and I was looking forward to it from that perspective. But there were elements that I weren't looking forward to.
Elements I weren't looking forward to?
Elements that I wasn't, thank you, looking forward to, Grammar King, that just blew me away, that didn't happen.
And how I know that Renee was engrossed in the format is that normally at a conference, right, she'll drag me out of some, you know, before going to some session and go, want to chat to this person, want to chat to this person. And when I said to her, you want to record a podcast, she was going, no, busy, going to sessions.
So the thing that blew me away most of all was just the not the passion, but I guess it is, but the collaboration of the people that were there. And it's really that it was more the attitude that was there. And what I mean is everyone was appreciative of Agile in general at a Scrum Scrum gathering. So it wasn't a us versus them.
Yeah, it wasn't, if you don't mention the word Scrum, we'll kick you out.
Yeah.
Type of thing.
And if you don't do it by the rule book, then you're doing it wrong. There was zero of that. And I'm just in awe of it.
Yeah, I haven't been to a Scrum gathering overseas, and I was talking to somebody about this in the break, and I'd welcome anybody's feedback on this that has been to a Scrum gathering. But here in Australia particularly, our community hasn't really been overtaken by Scrum per se. In other words, large organisations haven't gone and trained every one of their employees. There are some pockets of that, but I think because we had a small amount of certified Scrum trainers, and the ones that we have are really good, but they just couldn't get around to, you know, to all the stuff. We had, very early on, we had other organisations, you know, we talked about the Agile Academy before, for example, that, you know, were very early on in training, and you know, companies like ThoughtWorks that did a lot of internal training of it very early on that took that baton.
And that we really were treating it Agile as a true umbrella term as opposed to this method versus this method.
And I think as a community, I think we've grown up a bit differently like that, whereas I know friends that I've spoken to in Europe and the US, sometimes it was just get the next certification, and I think that's not such a big deal down this part of the world, at least not for all organisations.
Yeah, so I guess I walked away feeling very proud of us as a community.
Woohoo! Happy us!
Yay, high five!
Hang on. There you go, it's better than the radio.
Sorry, we're a bit far away.
Yeah, that's it. Well, it's a virtual high five.
So, what were your thoughts?
Look, I really enjoyed it. It was a good couple of days. I enjoyed it for a couple of other reasons. I was involved in the coaching sessions for one, which I know you were as well, which I haven't had the opportunity to do at a conference before. Other conferences where I've been asked, I had other commitments.
So what's a coaching session for the people listening?
So a lot of conferences now, I know the Agile conference in the US has as well, Scrum Gatherings, they have a thing called a coaching clinic, which is where coaches, you know, give up their time and help people out. And I just really enjoyed it. It was great just spending 25 minutes talking to someone in all cases that I'd never met before, 2 seconds to, you know, to think of them, and then to see their faces. You know, you would draw something on the flip chart or whatever that, you know, would go some way to giving them a solution to their problem. I mean, you can't solve their problem in 25 minutes, but, you know, just seeing them light up in all three of my sessions at the end of it, they kind of went, you know, when someone says, can I take that bit of paper? And, you know, oh, that's great. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah.
That's really awesome. Sometimes I think when you're an organisation, you know, you get a little bit complacent because people know you or they've, you know, been to the same training. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it. And I just spent a lot of time in hallways, particularly on the first day, just talking to people in the community that I hadn't seen in a while.
So you're saying basically you didn't really see anything?
I still saw...
Other than people. Are you saying that you did individuals and interactions over presentations and tools?
Yes, that's exactly what I did. Yes, yes, I did. Yes, yes. I think you might have your manifestos a little bit jumbled up.
What?
Anywho, highlights?
Oh, my goodness. Kenny Rubin blew me away.
So for those who don't know Kenny, he's been around Scrum circles for forever, but probably most recently and probably best known, if you haven't seen him, is for his most recent book Essential Scrum, which came out last year in the Mike Cohen series. So he had a keynote. He also had a second session as well. It sounds like you're a Kenny Rubin fanboy now.
Definitely fangirl. But the reason why is that he took Scrum and he took all lean thinking, systems thinking, you know, referred to a lot of stuff out there, which is you know, edgy, agile, wider, agile stuff and said, you know, this just makes good sense, and walked the audience through it. And I was so proud of him for doing it.
Yeah, there was you know, for us, there wasn't a lot in there that, you know, was a surprise.
No.
But the way that he packaged it and the way that he described it, there was something in there for everybody, because I went away with just a couple of analogies and a couple of different ways of illustrating things and that kind of thing. And similarly, there was people that were new on their journey that just went away like, you know, man, how do I hire this guy type of a thing, which is always good from a... you know, from that perspective. And I think that just elevated the entire Scrum community, because if there was anybody in that audience who was sitting there going, right, I'm going to come to this so I can go back to my office and tell them that this Scrum thing is overhyped piece of crap, right, there is no way you could have walked out of that session with that feeling. You would have been sitting there going, man, right, there's no way I could, dispute this.
And I would think what's great is that you can sit there and you can go, oh, I can see where we can improve here, here and here. It was just really easily laid out.
So what were some of the... was there any sort of key learnings you took from there?
So as you said earlier, for me personally, it was a lot of information that I was aware of and knew very well of. But it's always nice to be reinforced about the teams that you're working with. And, okay, yes, we're not focusing on that. Did I know that we're not focusing on that? Yes, but we should continue to look at that in the future.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I took away, because I've always been looking for this, like he mentioned... he had lots of stories, like, you know, his whole thing about utilization, right? You know, utilizing, you know, you're not there. When you're tracking it, it's about the utilization or getting stuff done, not about, you know, how utilized the team is. And he gave the analogy of if you're in a running race, you know, that, you know, you want to track the progress of the baton, not the, you know, not that the runners are 100% utilized. And there's little things like that that were really cool. And he also threw out some stats of some of Don Ryderson's, you know, like theory and stuff. The one I hadn't heard before, and maybe you had, was the Clark and Wheelwright 1992 study about multitasking.
Yes, I heard that.
And, you know, I just hadn't seen that before, that, you know, that after one project, it actually goes up. Right, yeah. and then two projects, and then it drops off. I hadn't actually seen that graph in that format before, which was, you know, kind of interesting. But I then liked what he said, is that study was done in 1992. It'd be interesting if they did that study again now, with all the, you know, the Facebooks and Twitters and things that, you know, mobile phones that didn't exist when they did that study in 1992. Because his point was that, you know, actually, you know, really anything over one thing, because we've got so many information
avenues right now
that, you know, it's even more of a argument that one project at a time makes sense.
I'm sorry, what were you saying, Craig? I was busy tweeting.
What? Were we doing a podcast? So, yeah, great, you know, great thing. The other thing which we have to give a shout out to Kenny, I know I've known about this because I worked on a article for InfoQ, is that he's done a lot of graphics. In the past, there's been graphics done by others in the Scrum community that you've had to... that weren't free credits. To use, yes.
Right.
Whereas Kenny has made all his artwork free, as long as it's credited, right?
Right. Okay.
Whereas in the past, you could kind of get away with it, but you actually had to physically ask for permission.
Yeah, whereas, that explains why I did all my Scrum drawings myself. Yes.
That's exactly right. So, and they're really quality artwork as well. So kudos to him for doing that.
Cool.
Awesome. Any other highlights?
From the conference all up?
Yeah.
For me, it was individuals and interactions over presentations and tools.
Okay, so the people you spoke to?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so the other one that I thought quite good was the, just for a different way of thinking, was Anton Russo talking about complexity thinking, in that. You know, we've had Kim Balstron on an earlier podcast, and if you haven't listened to that, go and listen to her talking about, you know, Kniphon. But
are you going to add an extra in there? But
no, but I probably will say but just because I can. The thing I took away from that is that I've heard it explained before, and that was okay. But he was talking about some of the techniques that that you can use to bring it in there, which is stuff that I'd kind of read about, but I don't think it had really sunk into me. So he was talking about different techniques like the butterfly stamping process and the safe fail probes. So safe fail probes are like, you know, small experiments that you can use to apply against this process. The future backwards type ideas. The things that I think we've had, you know, that it's almost like we've come up with in the agile community, but it's. I hadn't I hadn't actually seen them described as part of the framework before.
Yeah, I mean, I think they are slightly different from the community, and I say that because, you know, Kim has given me some private tuition on the front of Carnarvon. But it's...
What a stupid name. Let's just say that. And always go to say it, and then I think I'm going to say it wrong, and then end up saying it wrong anyway.
But I also have an understanding that you can't just holus bolus use them as well. You can't just talk about doing it without actually referring to
the models
and so forth. Yeah.
And I think that's where I was getting to, is that I've always struggled with... this is great, and it's a great way of thinking about putting a model in your head, but then actually, how do I apply it, right? How can I just go to an impediment in production and go... Ah, that's where it fits. It's kind of hard to apply to.
And did you get that problems. Out of it?
No, I didn't get that out of it. But what I did get out of it was those models are ways of maybe stretching out the information you need to get from the team.
Okay. All right.
Because it kind of, you know, by doing something like butterfly stamping, which is taking the problems and trying to apply them to the model.
Yes.
Right, just by using that as the model.
Yes.
Then might bring things out that weren't otherwise.
So basically you're recommending to people listening, check out those different techniques.
That's right.
And think about where you might be able to get some value out of them.
That's right. That was kind of the thing for me, you know, like... Yeah. Dave Snowden's, you know, like Google, you know, infamous Google video or YouTube video,
yep.
Right, is great. But man, you got to be, you know, you got to have a couple of drinks in you to, you know, sometimes to really get what's going on there. It's a bit of a tough slog, right?
Yes.
And I've seen lots of people try to re-explain it, and I think Kim is one of the better. Kim Balstron here in Australia is one of the better people, and I said go listen to her. The great talk that she did with Renee back at.
But in fairness, I can't look at the model anymore and not see two bums on top of each other.
Yeah, no, I think like that too. but yeah, but overall, really great conference.
Yes, definitely. You know, if it's on again next year, well worth the effort to go and see.
Absolutely. So it's great to see that it's come out to this area of the world.
Yay.
I was just because the podcast didn't get through, I just wanted to talk about something we recorded in the last podcast that none of you ever heard, which was the Ruby conference that I went to in Melbourne back in February. And I know this is an agile podcast, and there's a lot of things going on in my head at that point. But I just want to say the one thing that I really took out of the Ruby community, if you haven't ever hung out with some of those guys, is that they're a little bit like us. They're a very close-knit community, which I hadn't probably truly appreciated until actually hanging out with those guys for a couple of days.
But isn't that the Ruby community worldwide? They're like that?
Yeah. And they're very close-knit. They're very close-knit around, you know, the particularly the guy that invented Ruby, and they have a little saying that, you know, essentially that, you know, because he does good, then we do good as well, you know, and that's where things like, you know, Ruby gems and all sorts of other things, you know, have come from, where they share a lot of stuff in the community. So, you know, it's really just really close-knit, and a lot of the talks that they had at that particular conference, whilst they weren't agile related, they were very much community related. So it was like, you know, things like how can we help each other out, how can we do things like test better and those type of things. And if you think about some of the people in that community, people like Corey Haynes is someone that spent a lot of time, you know, with the agile community, but he's a Ruby developer. So it's that, it's kind of like, it's almost like if you're after someone who might have been in the XP community and you can't really track them down at an agile meetup, you'll probably find them at a Ruby meetup. So if you're trying to sort of, you know, get your head around technical practices or good technical stuff, you know, I think it's sort of just solidified with me that that's where a lot of the good people actually are, you know, and a lot of that has to do, I think, with the community.
So any other conference stuff you want to talk about?
No, I think I'm pretty good.
Okay, I just wanted to mention, because we did give a shout out to Kim just before, that there is the plan. Well, Kim is right now on her way over to America. Probably landed by now.
She is either on a jet plane or just got off a jet plane.
Yep. So she's on her way to Lean Kanban, North America.
She's somewhere in the big US of A.
Yeah, and she's also
She's 2 months or something?
I don't think it's 2 months. And she's also
That's a long time.
See the UX conference that's there. I'm not quite sure where that one is.
She's doing lots of cool stuff that basically we're completely jealous of.
And the very nice thing is she's going to try and do some podcasts on for us.
So in other words, now you've dropped her in there that we've told all our audience that she's got a recording stuff. It's like, now, yes. You got to deliver, Kim.
it would have been nice to ship Tony over, but Kim is just as brilliant.
Awesome. So, yes, look out for those, hopefully some point soon.
Yes.
Yeah, in a little while after she gets back and
settles. Yeah. I think she might be trying to send them over they can't happen.
Even better.
You know, Craig style.
You mean there's kind of like an interweb where you can send things from the other side of the world now?
I believe so.
Awesome. All right, what else is going on in the community? You've got piles of paper in front of you.
I know, but most of them probably don't matter. So one of the things that I wanted to highlight, and this happened really quite a while ago, I would imagine, is that, and interestingly, it was referred to a few times in jokes, at Scrum Australia, was the sheer weight of the number of certifications out these days.
Yes.
So I thought it was really cool at a Scrum conference they were giggling about it.
Yeah, it was a little lightweight, wasn't it?
Let's put this into context.
You mean you didn't have to show your certified Scrum Master certificate at the door? I had
no,
to.
Did you? Oh, no, I didn't.
I had to get it stamped and verified.
So, obviously, we've got all the Scrum Alliance associated certifications, of which there's a huge suite of,
Certified Scrum Master, certified Product Owner, certified Scrum Janitor, certified...
I don't think there's a janitor. There's a, certified Scrum Practitioner, certified Scrum Trainer, and...
Certified Scrum Podcaster.
It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, by the looks of it.
You can count. Awesome.
Thank you. And so on top of that, we've got IC Agile.
IC Agile, yes, indeed.
We have...
Scrum.org.
Oh, it has its own set, does it?
Oh, yeah.
How many are those?
Probably 6.
Okay. Because we can't have less or more.
Yeah. Lean Kanban.
There's Lean Kanban crew. So there is, I wanted to say that there was a recent release in the Lean Kanban crew of a certification for... Professional designation for people coaching Kanban. So now you can be a Kanban coaching professional.
Excellent. A KCP.
Yes, indeed. So if you feel like doing that, then you can join on that one. And there's also a Disciplined Agile certification Disciplined Agile certification, which is Scott Amble's one.
Scott Amble's one, yeah. I noticed that one had come out.
So what the hell?
Well, not only that, but then add the PMI.
Yes.
Right, yeah. The PMI Agile Practitioner.
Oh, what's going on here?
Well, it's got to make money somehow.
Is that really it? Is it purely about making money?
Money. Makes the whole world go round, Renee. Right, can't all just be love and podcasts. It's got to be...
Why can't we just call it training? Why does it have to be certification?
Well, it sort of comes back a little bit to... what I was talking about before is we've missed it a little bit in Australia here, and I mean, even for these, we have very few, if any, people that are certified in a lot of these particular things. But there are lots of organisations, even down this end of the world, that for some reason, someone in HR requires someone to have a certification to do something. If you take a look at the IT community, if you want to be if you want to be known for doing something in the Microsoft world, managers will look for Microsoft certified professional. At the end of the day, that most of the good people I know...
A piece of paper means nothing to your actual skills and abilities.
Okay, but do you have a university degree?
Yes, and it means nothing to what I learn at university.
True, but did it help you get your first job?
Yes.
There you go. Right, and I think that's the same thing, is if nothing else, it's just a paper to prove to someone who doesn't know any better.
Okay.
I will only say one good thing about... One thing that I... in favour of certifications.
There's consistency of content?
I'll say two good things about certifications. Right, one is consistency of content. I had a discussion with James Buck, the very vocal testing guy, right? And he's very vocal against the testing certification, because, yes, there are those too, right, that the ISTQB does. And his point was that it's a complete waste of time. The curriculum is a waste, right? People should just go and learn stuff themselves because all the curriculum is out there.
Mm, right? I like it.
Well, my point was is that there's people in this world that are self-starting, right?
Yes.
People like you and I. Yes. We did Certified Scrum Master.
Yes.
For varying reasons.
Yes.
But we learned our craft by...
doing it.
By doing stuff, by reading about stuff, by talking to people, by...
experimenting.
Right, all those kind of things. Because that was our thing, right? Yeah. It's the thing that we were passionate about. Sometimes it's very hard to know where to start. And I know the reason I did a Certified Scrum Master course, admittedly it was back in the, you know, in the 2000s somewhere. I don't even remember what year it was, but it was kind of early in the whole piece.
Mm.
I did it because I actually went, maybe I should do this course just to validate what I've been doing even remotely lines up with what the people in the Scrum community are saying, because there wasn't anywhere near as many around.
Yeah.
I was on one of the first
courses. And I think one of the reasons I did it was for the same. You know, reason number two was f***ing giggles, but... oh, I'm going to have to bleep that out. Damn it.
There goes the rating on iTunes. Thanks, Renee. Hello, people at Apple. Right. Really, what she meant to say is it was for peas and apples. No, hang on. Can I say peas?
Bleep that out. Sorry, there were two reasons.
I think we just got a name for a podcast. But anyway, two reasons. Reason one is...
what? What were we talking about?
Certification. Oh, man. Right. Yes, it's about the consistency of information, right? And I think the second reason, and one of the reasons I did technical certifications, is if there's something I'm not interested in, or trying hard to be motivated to do, a certification sometimes is a good way of helping you know what to learn. So I did very early in my career a Microsoft programming certification, and whilst I had to program that stuff at work. It probably wasn't the language that, you know, it was Visual Basic at the time. Don't, you know, people listening to this podcast, don't judge me. Hi, my name's Cray. I was a Visual Basic programmer.
Delphi?
I've done all sorts of languages, but that's beside the point of this podcast. But the point was that it focused me on going and learning a bunch of stuff about the language that I wouldn't have otherwise gone and done. And that's the other value of certifications, I think. But that is only the case if you're actually self-learning, not if you go to one of those, like a Certified Scrum Master class, or if you go to one of those Microsoft boot camps where, you know, you learn stuff for 3 days and then they teach you everything on the exam and then give you the exam.
Mm. Okay.
So I think sometimes that I've taken testers through ISTQB, and going back to the James Barker who I was talking about, going back to the James Barker example, the argument I was having with him is that... if I've got testers that are still kind of new or have missed a lot of that stuff because they didn't know where to go, at least with an ISTQB curriculum, right, I can say to them that this is at least the foundations of testing. Does it make them a great tester? No, it just gives them the starting point. And I think that's the same with Certified Scrum Master, is it at least gives everybody a level playing field.
Yes, so I'll put out the fact that obviously you don't become a master by doing Certified Scrum Master, but... I think everyone understands that these days.
Yes. Except the people
the
in people HR.
The people in courses. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, who are hiring for them. Why are we talking about that again? Oh, yeah, you had us.
I did pieces of paper on it.
And was your point the fact that there's all the new ones? Was that,
yeah,
that,
I just,
is that where you were
like,
going with this?
Okay. Where I was going with this is it's just like there's too many. There's just too many.
Too many
and I do suspect the same as what you said earlier, which is it's just a money grab.
So what I'd like to talk about, one of the things that, because we haven't podcasted in so long, is you're aware of all the stuff that's happened over the last few months about remote working, right? So there was a whole Yahoo.
Marissa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And we've talked on this a little bit, and I think we might have even had it on one of our previous recorded podcasts. So I guess the first thing is, where do you sit on this whole remote working argument? Because it's something that challenges us.
So this is really hard.
For those who are living under a rock, right?
Yeah.
Right. Your great friend Marissa, right?
Yeah, my BFF,
yeah.
Marissa.
What did she say?
You know, among many things.
Yeah.
That everyone gets an iPhone. Everyone. You get a free cafeteria, which is open until late at night, yep. And we'll keep the electricity on late at night.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Hmm. Interesting. And then on top of that...
But?
I don't really like you guys working from... I'm paraphrasing here, obviously. I don't like you guys working from home anymore. I want you to come in and do your work here now. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's sort of like, I think it's June or something like that, that it kicks off. So she sort of advised it in advance.
Yeah, and it'll, there's been lots of stuff written about that, and there's even been some retractions and all the rest of it. And it's not the only company that's come out of that lately. I know Best Buy is another company that's come out and went, ooh, we're on that too, right?
Yes.
But yeah, so it's something that we come across, and what was driving me for this is there was a recent article in Forbes by David Heinemeier Hansen.
Yeah, I would have read that one, yeah.
Who's the 37 Signals guy, and he's got a new book coming out on this, which is kind of what linked to the article in Forbes.
So it's a shameless plug for him?
Every article in Forbes is a shameless plug for somebody, but... But his point is that every employee should work from home, which is a complete, antithesis of it. But I guess that got me thinking about, we struggle with it sometimes on agile teams because of people being remote. But to me, it's kind of a reality of life that more people are going to be doing this over time for one reason or another.
Yeah, actually, I didn't read that one. I've read many other Marissa posts, but... The essence of it is if you have some people who work in one place and then some people who are working from home, by taking the stance of everyone work from home, you're actually putting everyone on a level playing field.
And that's his point. So his point is that working from home, the real benefits are that depending on your circumstance, but for a lot of people, it is just that, you know, boosting quality of life, right? More time with your kids, more time to...
Yeah, it's been proven many times that it's higher engagement, right?
All that kind of stuff. And probably more importantly, and this is something that we struggle a lot with when we're trying to get high-performing teams, is that it opens you up to a greater talent pool. Right.
Yes.
That,
yes.
You're working in Sydney. I live in Brisbane, right? But you have to commute to Sydney all the time. Okay, being a coach, you need to be a little more on site. You know, but how is the role of a coach going to evolve over time when half the team is not here? Right. There are challenges for us in the agile community. Firstly, about just how we deal with story walls and all those type of things.
Mm.
But how do we manage them, and how do we train them and coach them?
Yeah, I mean, I think in an ideal world, everyone would go virtual, and then you'd have this sort of environment whereby you can have these virtual meetings and you can see everyone together. You can see, effectively whiteboards as they exist in a virtual sense. And you can see a story wall exist in a virtual sense as well. And I don't mean like as in Jira, which is a separate tool. I mean physically or virtually people in a virtual room at a virtual wall.
Yeah. And a lot of it, the thing about this is that people like Marissa are trying to shut it down. I mean, I'm sure there was some other point behind that, and I haven't gone and read all the other stuff. But the stats, and this is in the article, that from 2005 to 2011, the number of remote workers grew 73%. Right, so it's growing, and that to me seems rather low. Right? I would have thought it was a greater number than that, but that's still a pretty exponential leap. But I really love the he's got a quote right at the end from New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. And he's talking about the fact that, there's a generation gap of like old managers, who, don't like the idea of telecommuting, and the new generation wise who do want to do it.
Mm.
And the quote from Michael Bloomberg is, "Telecommuting is one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard. As the kids would say, sure, grandpa." Right. So, I think, as we get this different workforce coming through, as we push things like, agile, as we do more things like offshoring and outsourcing and cloud computing and mobile, it's just inevitable. And it's interesting to see how companies are dealing with this right now.
Yeah, I guess to wrap it up a little bit about context about how I feel about Marissa is, more than anything, it's just disappointing for me. I'm just really disappointed in her. And the reason,
particularly when she did some really awesome things at Google, right?
The reason why is, women around the world are looking to her as a role model, and she's just...
That's why I meant when she did some awesome things at Google, right? She really elevated that status.
And she's showing more than anything. She's just a pointy head boss.
Do you think part of that's the Yahoo factor, though?
I don't know what the hell it is.
I'm just wondering, if it wasn't her, if it was somebody else, do you think they may have come to the same conclusion?
I think there's a great portion of CEOs or potential CEOs that would have come to the same conclusion, but they would have been analytical thinking CEOs. And if you had a synergistic thinking CEO, then you'd have a completely different result.
Cool.
Disappointed, Marissa. I know you don't listen to the podcast.
And if you are, Marissa, please, we'd welcome you to come on and defend your status. Like a right. Okay. What else do you have, Renee? You got this piece of paper that says 50 on it, and it's just kind of, it's intrigued me sitting there. Normally I can't see what you have on pieces of paper, but all I can see is a big number 50, which probably has nothing to do with the article, but hey.
So you'll like this, because you'll actually be able to resonate with it, given some of the conference topics today. So it's a post by Powell Brodzinski. Sorry.
We'll put that in the show notes.
Yes, called Whip Limits by Conversation. Okay. And it's not really talking about Kanban in software development. It's talking about the biggest challenge when applying Kanban on a portfolio level is how to introduce whip limits. So Powell had a go at trying to define how you set a whip limit if you're using Kanban for portfolio management of all of your projects. So the essence of how he said it, because it's pretty much a really hairy problem, right, is that one has to take into consideration the size and the length of projects and the dependencies between them. I'm going to go over the page. If we discuss the current context, if we talk about the size and dependencies and yada yada, everything that's happening right now, the estimated effort needed to complete the new project available and the required capabilities in any other potential projects, we can likely say whether we should or not start the project. So this is basically the core of the idea of whip limits by conversation. It's about understanding the different elements of the project, having a conversation about that, and saying, can we achieve this given everything else that we've got going on? And then as soon as you've got that limit set, where, okay, we can't fit in more to this bucket, that's what we should set our whip limit to be.
So this is no different than to the idea of how you prioritize things for a sprint or an iteration. It's the same type of idea, right? You keep saying, can we put something in, can we put something in, can we put something in, we're full.
Yeah.
But the difference is here that you're talking at a much more granular level on a day-by-day basis, not just at a sprint planning session once every fortnight.
Yeah, exactly. And
heaven forbid, people might actually need to talk about it. I mean, I don't know. That's a bit of a way out comment there, Renee.
Yes, I guess so. But what was interesting...
That was sarcasm, by the way, people. Yeah. Just in case you couldn't pick that up in my voice, that was sarcasm.
For me, it was interesting because today Kenny Rubin talked also about portfolio management.
Oh, you're the new love of your Scrum life, Kenny Rubin.
Anyway, and he talked about whip limits in the context of how he saw portfolio management. And it wasn't dramatically different, but what it was, okay, let's have a look at the number of BAs that we have, number of devs that we have, number of testers that we have. Let's look at product or feature teams, however you want to skew it. Okay, if we made a team and another team and another team and another team and another team, the number of those feature or product teams, that's our whip limit.
Yeah, I thought that was
a more elegant solution to it.
Yeah, whip limit by team, I think, is really cool. And I know every project manager I've ever met will argue with me about that, because it then comes back to that utilization of people or the work, right?
Mm.
It's like, well, hang on, that team might only be 70% effective. I mean, how many times have you heard that
as a coach or a Scrum Master? Right. So in that extra 30% of time, they can innovate.
Yeah, or get your crap together and remove the impediments so things move along.
That's
usually where it comes along, right? And that's even that study that I was referring to. The reason that that they believe that two projects you could do simultaneously rather than just one in multitasking was because of the fact that you can handle two projects at a time because the first one is going to hold for some reason or another, right? That's the reason why.
Yeah.
That's why multitasking goes up, because you will already have those hold factors. What we're really saying is actually, right, if you look at
one project at a time.
Yeah, and keep that highway moving.
Yep, yep. The thing that I thought of as he was talking about it today, though, was, well, what about the ops guys? And there was no... Because he was really talking about three roles in an organisation of where it's potentially a lot more.
Yeah, although he did refer to that in his he didn't call it water scrum fall, which I typically refer to as the Gartner term, but he did talk about that in his keynote about the fact that around the scrum team, right, there are problems at the layer where the requirements come through and the plant portfolio planning, which was actually the talk he was talking about today, and then there is obviously things you've got to fix downstream as well, right? Things like you're getting through to production and the likes of that. Renee's confused look, because I don't remember that part of the slide deck. Maybe I was asleep then.
I do remember partially. I just, to me, it's not a clear answer.
No, well, but I think in the premise of the talk he was giving today, which is really about portfolio planning, that is, you're right. You have to plan the utilization of those teams down the end, and I think it comes to the fact that I think in the world of the perfect world, you would have these teams that have everything you need inside them that they could actually deliver online production.
Yeah.
Right. The reality in lots of organisations is that's not the case. You have a separate ops area, and if that's going to be the case, that's fine. If you look at things like the SAFe, the Scaled Agile framework, which is Dean Leffingwell's work, there is lots of work in there. The whole point about the Scaled Agile framework is actually about two things: about portfolio planning and how the heck you get things out to production. Right, and that's where a lot of work and scaling has happened.
Do any of these tackle the my ops person is outside of my team problem?
Yeah, well, Scaled Agile framework does. I mean, there's this notion of, and I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head, but it's like a scrum master for the build or for the release. Right? It's called a release master or something along those lines. That is actually somebody is making sure that all the stuff is coming through the pipeline.
So if I need a network environment, I need a new MQ setup, what happens?
So you're talking about the environmental ops type stuff that comes up on a day to day basis through development.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think to a lot of the frameworks I've seen, that is assumed that you can do it inside the team. It's that T-shaped skill type thing.
Yeah.
Right? But the reality is that sometimes if you need a server provisioned, right, someone ain't going to let you do that.
No.
Right. Or you've got to ring a vendor to do it, or those type of things. And that's where a lot of the holdups come up in
teams. I agree, and that's what I'm saying. I still can't see anything that's the silver bullet for that problem.
There you go. There's a book in the wings for you, Renee.
If I wasn't writing four already.
Yeah. I honestly can't remember with the SAFe framework, and I don't have it in front of me because my internet connection in this room is like really bad. But
you got a 4G connection there. You can't blame this room.
It's a 4G dongle. It's getting like LT connection.
Oh, Sydney's great for connections. What are you talking about?
Yeah, right. maybe the biggest city in Australia is we've got the slowest internet access, but I digress. But there's lots of stuff in that framework, and I honestly can't remember where that's tackled. But for the most part, in that diagram down in the bottom left hand corner, just to prove that I have read the thing before, it talks about scrum teams, right? And it talks about a release manager, and a lot of it is about what they call the train, right? The release train, and about pushing things through. But I guess what you're talking about is the fact that there's lots of mail stops along the way, right? You've got to stop and collect.
Yeah, I'm talking about the dinosaur train where you have to add the dinosaurs in and take them off again.
The dinosaur train?
It's a kids' TV show.
I knew it was. But explain.
No.
Okay, there you go. If you have kids, you'll absolutely know what Renee is talking about. And obviously, I've just given myself up. The last thing I want to talk about is there's been a couple of articles going around. I don't know whether you've seen this one, but there was an article that some guy wrote a few months back or a month or so back called The Insufficiency of Scrum. Did you see this?
Scrum's insufficient?
Well, it's kind of like someone wrote an article in 2008 called The Insufficiency of Scrum. And
5 years ago?
Yes, a long time ago.
Just to clarify,
And somebody picked it up.
I can do math still, by the way.
And I can't. The name of the post is actually by someone called Super JMN. But anyway.
What?
It's look at the website here. It's in Spanish.
Oh.
Right. But the article is in English, right?
Okay.
It's called Adventures in .NET or something like that.
Mm.
Anyway, the point of the matter is that he went and read this, and obviously he's new to Scrum, and he went through and went, okay, looks like this methodology is pretty unsound, because it's okay when you start out, but then when you kind of get going, it's like what he calls a world of goo, right? You build a tower and it's goo, and when you start, it's all quick and easy and everything works okay, but then it's like a tower, right? It starts to fall over pretty quickly.
So, Okay.
So anyway, yeah. this article was written, and for one reason or another, Jose is the guy who wrote it. That was his Twitter handle, Jose Manuel Nieto. And he sent a tweet out and said, "What do you think about my article?" Which then opened up this entire diatribe, as you would expect.
Wait, he sent a tweet out.
He sent a tweet. He just
in 2013 about his article in 2008.
No, it was someone else's article.
Oh, right. Okay. Right,
that he had read. Right, and then he put his own thoughts on it. So Martin Hinslewood from D-Zone sort of picked it up and went, "Well, actually, I really think the insufficiency of Scrum is a fallacy." Right, which I think we'd kind of all agree with. But what I really liked was, I guess, the points that he came up. I mean, obviously, he was trying to say that what this guy was really saying is this whole world of goo was that people were trying to just follow the process as written, right? That it was completely and utterly rigid. And there was things that I think people at the conference were even talking about. That
we had a great conversation over Scrum, Scrum Butt, Scrum And, yeah.
Yeah, so all that kind of stuff. But, you know, Agile Scrum's not a silver bullet, and you have to, you know, tweak it for whatever it is that you're trying to solve, and continue to tweak it over time to make it suit the needs that you have, right? It's not just follow the rule book, right? Which is what we're talking about right at the start.
Mm.
But what I liked about this article, and it's one that I think is, you know, when people have this kind of argument with me, is that he said, so how do you actually kind of prove to people, like, how do you get people out of that thinking? If you sort of brought in that people are saying, hey, this thing's kind of a bit broken. And really, just really simple, kind of obvious steps.
Okay. But
the first one he just said is, you have to hold effective retrospectives, and I think the key word there is effective,
yeah.
Right, to prevent the insufficiency of Scrum, right? And what his point is that a lot of teams who get into this position, right, start blaming the framework, and they don't realise that things are getting progressively worse until it's too late. So unless you actually stop and actually reflect, which is the whole point of the framework in the first place, because what's the first thing that people drop?
Retrospectives.
Right? Then how do you even know that you fell into that in the first place, right? And a lot of that is what he's saying here is that the responsible party is the Scrum Master, and a lot of the time is that the Scrum Master is not actually on the ball or looking for, looking for the signs that, you know, the team might be crumbling, right? And in the end, it just all gets blamed on the model in the first place. And I like this, that he says that according to the Scrum Guide, the development team can choose their Scrum Master to make sure they're getting someone as effective as possible. And he says, yes, this also means that they can unchoose their current one. Interesting thought, right? His step two, and I think this one's probably the one I'm more resonated with, is stop creating technical debt to prevent the insufficiency of Scrum.
Right.
So he said, you know, we need to stop creating technical debt. We all agree this. To do this, you need to focus on one thing, working software at least every 30 days. And I think this is the one that already gets me now, the 30 days thing. Right?
Forget about
right.
that, yeah.
Yep. But, you know, I still see so many teams that, you know, they just don't have working software at the end of a sprint. Right? It's like, oh, yeah, we almost got that done. Oh, we'll carry the card over to the next sprint. There's always excuses. Oh, yeah, we couldn't get it through the regions. Oh, yeah, we need two more days to test it. Right. You've got to be focused on that, and you've got to stop bringing things into the sprint and focus on finishing the ones that aren't there. And a lot of that is due to testing, right? Because your testers aren't working there. So this article goes on to talk about TDD and ATDD and a bunch of those kind of things. So he's really saying that really one of the problems with Scrum is that because Scrum doesn't talk about the technical practices, people ignore them. And that's something that I've been battering on for a long while. So it's just something that resonated with me. And, you know, kind of the end is that, you know, remember that the software you're building is an organisational asset, and decisions to cut quality affect the value of that asset and thus must be reflected in your organisation's financial statements. Cutting quality in your software without first gaining the approval to do so from your financial executives is unprofessional at best and fraud at worst and is always incompetence. Nice statement, right? But, you know, but I think that's kind of true, right? Is if you treat it like an asset, that is, there's some truth in that statement.
Yeah.
And we'll put the link in there, but if you actually go read the article, there is a whole pile of then comments that, you know, that follow on from the article, which is pretty cool as well. But had a little bit of play on Twitter in the last few weeks, which was interesting.
Great.
One last thing I just wanted to mention. Do you use Goodreads for reading books, for keeping track of the books you're reading and stuff, Renee?
Okay, so I have a mobile phone, which I don't like reading books out of.
Yeah, but that's Kindle, right?
I'm getting there. Yeah. So generally, most of the books I read are actually physically, you know, old school books.
Yeah, stop using Goodreads.
Well, what's Goodreads? Oh, sorry, I thought it was like an Amazon Kindle variant. It's not.
No, so Goodreads is social reading. So there's a couple of those around. There's Library Thing and Goodreads.
Well, there you go. I've learnt something new.
There you go. I like it. It's a way of keeping track of what you're reading. It's got reviews. You know how you go to Amazon and see a review of a book? Oh, it's like
Bean Hunter for coffee, but for books.
If I drank a lot of coffee, I would agree with you. But yes. Sure. Yes, that's kind of thing. Anyway, I just want to point out that there's a lot of the Agile community on Goodreads. So if you're actually after an Agile book, sometimes you can see a lot of the community because they share their stuff, and you can friend people, or you can friend people like me. And
well, I'm reading Fixing the Game right now. I'm really loving it.
Cool. So people will see that you're reading it. I think the nice thing about it, and the people I friend obviously from the Agile community, so I can see things that people are reading, and I see trends and go, a lot of my friends are reading that. Maybe I should read that as well. What do you think of that book? And it's amazing how, a bit like Twitter, it opens it up that people then sort of ask me, like I was at a game gathering the other week, a meetup the other week, and someone said, I see you're reading such and such, what do you think?
So
it's a good thing. Anyway, the point I was going to make out to this is that that's all well and good, but I see Amazon is now about to take it over. So
yes, I did see that.
Which means that they actually have
which
two.
Which is why I had actually assumed that it was,
So, it just seems like all the point I'm sort of trying to make is that a lot of these good sites, are really in the sights of, being taken over by the
people. Do they get bought out and then shut down?
Well, for a lot of some of our favorite tools, that is the case. I think what they were saying as part of the takeover is, don't worry, people, it'll remain the same and remain independent. And Amazon has actually shown that they've done that in the past, things like Zappos and stuff that they've kind of left separate and alone. But interesting to see. But anyway, it just reminded me that it's cool little site, but it'll be interesting to see what happens to it.
So, what are you reading?
I've just finished Agile Scout's book. Finally got around to reading that. So it's not a very big book. And actually, just on that, and to our good friend, great book. The thing I'll say about it is it's like a book in two parts, right? That book was originally the Scrum Pocket Guide, which I didn't actually ever read. I can tell where that book finished and almost his new content started.
Yeah,
the first content, which is the first 15 or so chapters, is the kind of thing that I would not without hesitation, I would give to any manager who said, just tell me about this Scrum thing. It is extremely well written, right? And has got, it's just simple, right? It's 100 pages of simplistic stuff. One of the better, short guides, right? Things that's a plain read, type book.
Yeah.
But then the chapters afterwards are actually really awesome as well. You can almost see he's changed it. It's more of his
mental model shifted.
And that's just as good as well. And I got far more. Again, nothing brand new to me, but I almost felt like I was getting inside Peter's mind, right? Peter Saddington, his mind about what he was actually thinking about. So
scary for you.
Yeah, maybe. I love Peter to death, and he's a friend of the podcast. But it was a really great little book. So I'll be writing up a review of that very shortly. But finally got around to reading that, which was good.
So what are you on to now?
Haven't decided yet. Right, maybe I'll pick up Kenny Rubin's book since he's now your new BFF.
Okay.
What about you? What's on your reading list, Renee?
I'm reading Fixing the Game.
What's that about for those who haven't heard of it?
So what I love about it, it's about... I can't even remember the author, so that's pretty bad. So we'll link it in the show notes. But it's about how for a very long time, and even right now, CEOs, COOs, and everyone's focused on shareholder value. And it's about how we got into this position of this and why it is so incredibly detrimental to us as a humanity going forward and how to get out of that position.
Okay. So is it the book you'd find in the management section?
Yeah, potentially. But for me, it's got a lot of synergies with Agile.
As a lot of those books do, right?
Yeah. But I have a look at a lot of the reasons when I get frustrated in organisations over agile transformations and other things, and it explains to me in beautiful language what I've never gotten before, which is that managers are focused on completely different things for completely different reasons.
Okay.
So it helped me therapeutically come to terms with a lot of issues that I've had to deal with.
So the subtext was like, you can understand why the idiots are doing idiotic things, maybe.
Exactly. Yes.
Which is kind of, I think, what you really wanted to say.
Yeah. Okay, yes.
Yeah. So yeah. Why are you reading that book, Renee? Dealing with idiots, perhaps?
No, not at the moment. But it's a book that Steve Denning's highly recommended a lot, and I know a lot of other people have talked about, yeah.
Cool, awesome. There you go. That might have to be a new feature. What's on the bookshelf today?
Yeah.
There you go.
Because it does change quite a lot for me.
Yeah, it does. I read a lot of technical books. I just actually finished reviewing a book that, technical proofreading, a book for Manning called Sonar in Action. And if you're into more the technical XP practices, I think it's a really awesome book, from a technical perspective about how to look at the quality of code. But it's a book that is written that I would actually hand to any development manager, maybe someone who's a little away from the technical side, about understanding about how to read technical debt and code as well.
Cool. And on that note, as a side note, I have just finished reading as well. I'm going to get the name of it wrong. Was it actually called Real Options?
Yes.
It was, yes. So Olive...
So you've been reading a cartoon book.
And Chris Matz. They have produced, and it's not... quite yet released, so I guess I've read a preview version of their book on Real Options. It's a comic book. It's sort of in the fictional sort of guise.
Graphic novel is probably the correct bookseller's term for that.
And it's really refreshing to see an agile, well, not even agile book, but I guess an agile variant book out there in a totally different style.
How long did it take you to read it, out of curiosity?
It was really quick. Hours tops.
Because it was a graphic novel?
Yes. And I was concentrated. I wasn't skim reading or anything. It was a lot of fun.
Cool. All right. I'm going to have to give that a go, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah. I'm going to leave my baggage at the door and give a graphic novel a go.
But you can't give it a go yet because I don't think it's out yet. But sure. Soon.
Sure. By the time this podcast probably goes out and by the time I get around to reading something new, it'll probably be out by then. Awesome. Well... There you go. That's kind of like us catching up for not quite the last 3 months. I mean, that last podcast we did was absolutely awesome and the things we spoke about were great.
Yes.
But hey, that's
We were going to talk about the Agile State of the Art survey, but we might have to leave that for next time.
Oh, yes. We did talk about the version 1 survey, but yes, let's leave that for the next one. I've actually got an article coming out on InfoQ about that where I interviewed the head of version 1. So,
oh, cool.
We can talk a little bit about that some more as well. Awesome. So... If you want to get in contact with you, Renee, where do people go?
Renee@theagilerevolution.com.
And I finally figured out how to log into my mailbox, so if you email me, I'll actually listen to you now. Craig@theagilerevolution.com. And actually, if you haven't checked out the agilerevolution.com website...
Oh, yeah, that was another reason why we haven't podcasted for a very long time.
Yeah, our provider, because we are such tightwads, at least when we started, because we went, wonder if anyone will even listen to this podcast... We stupidly went with a free provider by one of Marissa's companies. No, it was Twitter, actually. Sorry, I'll take it back. There's a company that's now been overtaken by Twitter. And they decided they're going to shut our website down by the 30th of April. So we had to move it all, which was completely... If anyone had... Kiddies, if you ever decide to run your own podcast, right, host your own files. That's all I could say, because it is a pain moving. And we only had, 56 episodes?
Yeah.
But even
so, thank you, Craig, for moving 56
anyway, I'm
episodes.
Just saying, please give me some love. Go visit the website. Tell me it looks at least half awesome.
It does look better. There's more pictures in it. That's pretty cool.
There is more pictures there. Yes. Mm. Thank you, Google. It's good. So that was another reason we had to remove and rehost all our files and all the rest of it. But it's all great now. Everything's back up and running, and great to be back talking to you again, Renee.
Excellent.
Right. So, yes, I met Craig at theagilerevolution.com. Find us at theagilerevolution.com. Of course, Tony, where can you find him?
Tony?
Brisbane, somewhere. Hey, Tony, we love you. All right, come back soon. All right, he is still with us. He's still with us. It's just he's not here. He's with us here in spirit at the Scrum Gathering in Australia. All right, that's about all the time we have. So until next time, Renee.
Viva la Revolution.
Viva la Revolution. See ya.